Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we're looking at the state's thriving arts scene and how the arts are woven so tightly into our lives. What do the arts in South Dakota mean to you? How about arts education? My next guest is Heath Weber. He's a South Dakota native and the new chair for the South Dakota Chorale Board of Directors. He's Associate Dean for Performing Arts at Morningside College in Sioux City. We'll talk more about his various roles in the arts and arts education in a moment. But first, the South Dakota Chorale was recently honored with the America Prize in Choral Performance. Let's start there. Welcome, Heath.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here with me.
My pleasure.
And let's start with what the South Dakota Chorale is for folks who don't know.
So the South Dakota Chorale is an itinerant choral ensemble, meaning we bring people from kind of all over. We have lots of membership from South Dakota and the surrounding area, and then we do have some membership from all over the country. So we sing with some pretty fantastic people and have amassed a really wonderful ensemble, a special thing for South Dakota.
How often does it get together, and how often are performances, or what's the season like?
Typically, we have about 3 concerts a season. This year, we'll do our first concert in January, and then we'll develop a concert season based on the following season, about 3 concerts that next year.
All right. So top-notch singers from all over the country audition.
Correct.
Fly here to audition? Do you have remote?
Some of them do remote auditions. I will send their pieces and whatnot to Brian Schmidt, our conductor. Mm-hmm. So, and then he chooses the singers based on those auditions.
But then everybody comes physically for the rehearsals and for the performances.
That's great.
How long has it been around?
You know, this is, I think, 2005. I could be speaking incorrectly, but it's been around for quite some time. So 3 compact discs that have been released, 1 recently, which is, of course, where the American Prize comes from.
All right, let's talk about the prize.
Yeah.
What is that?
So the American Prize is all recorded. So you submit recordings to a pretty fantastic panel of judges, and they are located all over the country. Many, many prominent conductors and singers and artists in lots of areas. So there are American Prize awards available in choral performance, in opera performance, in directing and conducting. And so you send in your work, and then this panel of judges does the adjudication, and then they award based on that. So it's a pretty fantastic and I think a heavy competition because it comes from all over.
So what's the significance, or what kind of cachet does it have once that's attached to your organization?
There's a small cash prize, which is nice for any budding organization, but the piece that it does offer is the capital of winning a prize like that recognizes excellence in the arts. We don't have very many of those things. You know, we have Grammys and that's great. And that's a whole different kind of thing. But this to be adjudicated by prominent singers and actors and conductors within our own genre really makes it a special notation. So and the choirs has worked hard and has developed a pretty strong following, so we're proud of right. our work.
What was this recording?
It was the Teberg Masses.
Okay. What a great story that was, too.
Really, really was special, and it was special to sing. You know, I think all of the singers had a really incredible connection to the music, and when we did it again at Duke Chapel for their performance series, it took on a truly a life of its own. You know, to bring us all back together to sing that music was really special.
Just very briefly, the history of that for those who, and we'll put a link up on our website to this conversation we're having with the previous conversation about that performance so people can hear more. But a quick overview of the history of that was compelling.
So the composer, Marcel Teberg, brought his friends together right before he was swept off to a concentration camp and played his music. And these 2 masses were parts of that. And his music was collected by his friends, and he was then subsequently killed in a concentration camp. And his music ended up in Albany, New York. And we were the first to resurrect his choral works, which was really neat. So it came at a really profound time in the world of Holocaust remembrance, and it was neat for us to bring that music back to life.
You grew up in South Dakota.
I did.
You stay close by. You still do Governor's Camp, Ambassadors of Excellence work at the University of South Dakota. I want to talk a little bit about this notion of the arts in the state and what we have to offer the rest of the country. When you were kind of growing up in that high school, wanting to make a career that at least included singing for you, did you think I can stay in South Dakota? Did you think we had sort of what we needed to support you on that journey?
It's funny that you asked this. I had a really wonderful conversation with one of my teachers, Lisa Grevlos at Augustana, and I wanted to be a performer. That was my thing. I said, I just want to perform. I need to go away. I need to get away from here. And I think that's the mantra that so many artists speak. And Dr. Grevlos said, you know, you can perform wherever you are. Wherever you will be, there will be something for you to do. And if there isn't something for you to do, then you need to create that thing. And I just sang with her the Fairy Tale Opera in the Park. Yeah. And we were talking about that. And I said, you know, it's very true. And she's done great work creating some opportunities for singers. But also the state has, I think, great opportunities, but you really have to work to get at them. You know, and that's one of the things that we struggle with the chorale is, you know, people say, well, they aren't all from South Dakota. Well, but they're here, you know, and right. That piece of the puzzle is so powerful for us that we have been able to attract world-class singers from all over the country who are willing to give their time and expand the art here in our state. You know, just like the South Dakota Symphony has itinerant players and the Sky Force has, it's right. Not made of all Sioux Falls natives.
So, they could, in theory.
Right.
I mean, that's not, you know, it's not in the policy that
right.
they're not.
Right.
So keep auditioning.
Yes.
And
yes, absolutely.
They could be. Is our arts profile high enough in the country? When you travel around, do you hear, you know, people saying, yep, South Dakota?
That's, you know, at the National ACDA Convention, I didn't sing on that roster, but people would say, what's the South Dakota chorale? Yeah. And the splash that the chorale made at convention was really powerful. People left that concert and said, what just happened? What did we just experience? Because it's a very different sonority. The ensemble sings very free, big voices, and it creates a really beautiful experience. It takes you over, certainly. Mm-hmm. When I heard them for the first time, I my head snapped back and I thought, well, this is a thing. This is a new, exciting experience for me.
Pay attention. You sing with them?
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
And now you're the chair of the board. What's next for this organization? Where do you want to take it in the future?
You know, it's important for us to expand our reach in not only in the city, but in the state and nationally and internationally. You know, I spoke a little bit about some of the speed bumps that we have, especially in the city. So it's important for people to know who we are. We've been a board of a lot of artists, and that's a wonderful thing. But artists often don't like to toot their own horns. That's a tough thing. You know, we're fine. It's a fine little choir. It's very South Dakotan. You know, it's very much what we live as Midwesterners. And so to really do work that expands the choral aspect of the arts in South Dakota, we are a special ensemble. And I want more people to know who we are and what we do.
Right. So does it need to grow by the number of singers? Does it need to grow in the reach that it has?
I think it's the reach, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, we've done some really great outreach with Lincoln High School, with Roosevelt High School. And so we continue to work to expand the young people who really love choral singing in our city. And that, of course, does some great expansion with the parents. You know, we need to go see that concert this evening. We need to go experience that. Because when we sing next to those young people, they, you know, their eyes light up and they're like, what? I had no idea this kind of sound could happen together. Right. So it's again, like I said, it's a very different sound. It's not the typical Lutheran choral sound that I would say sometimes can be caged. It's, you know, it's very free and very open and very rich and lush. So that's a different sonority for people who are used to that upper Midwest Lutheran choral tradition.
All right. So what age were you at when you sort of could hear that difference and could sort of articulate what that difference was?
You know, my teacher at Augie, Dr. Jim Johnson, really let us sing freely. And that was a thing that I appreciated. When I started teaching, I worked in Sioux Falls and worked in the Twin Cities and then took this job in Sioux City. And the kids sang very differently in Iowa. It was a very different experience. And that's what really kind of locked me into, I love this idea of letting the voice really be free and really sing, and then crafting the sonority of the ensemble by moving voices or by allowing especially the lower register to really be free and open. And it really changes this pyramid of sound that we hear. Mm-hmm. So that's, I would say it didn't happen until, it certainly happened in college. But when I had my own ensemble, that's really when that clicked in for me.
The kids sang different in Iowa.
They do.
How is that possible?
It sounds strange, I know, but Iowa has a pretty fantastic all-state chorus process that really builds the voice. So it's a very different experience than what happens in South Dakota.
But, interesting.
It is
so interesting. What do we need next, then, in this state for arts education? You've worked a lot with gifted kids at Ambassadors of Excellence, which is not just arts. It's gifted education throughout the state. What are your thoughts about what direction that needs to go in?
You know, I think as arts organizations in the state begin to expand and people really recognize the power of a strong arts community. And, you know, there are strong arts communities all over. My aunt and uncle live in Sturgis, and they have a surprisingly wild and crazy arts community there. And I think as more people become comfortable with those kind of things, we can't be comfortable in our willingness to spread the good word for what the arts are in our state. There are great programs all over, and we have to be vigilant and diligent in our support and keeping all of those organizations vital.
Okay, so how about critique, though, and being critical? It's not just about supporting. How do you support someone without just giving everyone a free pass for not doing the work that needs to be done to be at a higher level artistically?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's like I just read an article about the standing ovation happening all the time. And that's a real thing. I think as musicians, we are naturally highly critical of the work that we do. And so that internal critic that we work with, our own internal critic, helps to build that art. And then I think as the public becomes more informed consumers of art, they will choose the things that are really making a meaningful impact in their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, projects like the T-Berg Masses made a huge impact. I mean, that was a heart-wrenching and soul-fulfilling. That final song that we did was really, it was a soul-bursting kind of tune. And audiences responded to that, you know, with a heads back, like, oh my heavens, what did I just witness?
Right.
So those are the kind of experiences that we need to expand in the state and encourage people to attend and see and hear more of.
Right. I was up at the Guthrie Theater a couple of weeks ago and saw Sunday in the Park with George, and that show was over and that crowd was not going to stand up until the female lead came out, and then they stood up for her. They were the male lead. They did not get it. Like they were, I thought, nobody's going to stand up at the Guthrie. So I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
In Sioux Falls in South Dakota, it's pretty pretty common that you would be on your feet at the end of a show. We're appreciative.
We are. And that's, you know, there's not a thing wrong with that.
Right.
Because as our arts culture expands, we can become more discerning critics of the arts that we hear. And that's important.
Heath Weber is the new chair for the South Dakota Chorale Board of Directors. He's also Associate Dean for Performing Arts at Morningside College in Sioux City, Iowa. The South Dakota Chorale was recently honored with the American Prize in Choral Performance in the Professional Division. Heath, thanks so much for being here. Come back again.
Thank you. I'll do.